And we're holding the last line of Mem Aleph Amud Beis. We learned in the Mishnah of Yosi Omer Yom Tov. We're talking about in the Mishnah about the dinim of taking lulav and esrog when the first day Sukkot falls out on Shabbos. So we said in the Mishnah that in the time of the Beis Mikdash, they took lulav and esrog only on the first day of Sukkot outside the Beis Mikdash or outside Yerushalayim. And then we said that at that time then you took lulav on the first day of Sukkot if it came out on Shabbos. And then so we said that Rabbi Yossi had said that if a person accidentally takes out the lulav on Shabbos to Rosh Hashanah, then he's going to be potter from a chatas b'pnei hotzi b'rishus because he carried it out with rishus, meaning that he's in the process of trying to do a mitzvah, and it's what the Gemara is going to call soon toya b'dvar mitzvah. He made a mistake in the course of trying to do a mitzvah, and therefore he'd be potter from a chatas, says Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says Omer Abaya. Now that would only apply if he had not yet been yotze the mitzvah of lulav. So he's picking it up for the first time today and carrying it out. We're going to say in a second how it comes that he picks it up and he hasn't yet been yotze on the face of it. The first time you pick it up, then already you're yotze. Avo yotze boy chaya. But Abaya says even Rabbi Yossi would agree that if he had previously been yotze the mitzvah of lulav that day, and now he took the lulav out to Rosh Hashanah Abim, then he's not toya b'dvar mitzvah. Now he's not accomplishing a mitzvah right now. He's not the idea of toya b'dvar mitzvah is that he's torud, that he's preoccupied with the fact I have to do the mitzvah, and therefore he forgets and does it in the wrong way, in this case by taking it out to Rosh Hashanah Abim. But once he's already done the mitzvah, then that shouldn't be on his mind anymore, and therefore even Rabbi Yossi is going to agree that he's chayav. So the question is, what do you mean that he previously was not yotze, and now the first time he's been yotze? Homed agbehe nafakbe. As soon as you pick up the lulav of an esrog, you're already yotze with it. So how is it possible for him to be carrying it out and not yet have been yotze, such that we should say that he's toya b'dvar mitzvah? And the answer is omer abaye kashahofchay. So Abaya says, because we're talking about, let's say he carried it out upside down. All the Dalad Minim we've said before have to be Derech Gilos, and they all have to be in the orientation as they grow. So the Lulav and Hadassim and Arabis all have to have their tip upward, and the Esrog, so the Esrog actually really grows on the tree upside down from our perspective. But the end of it that is attached to the tree is considered to be the bottom part, because to begin with, when the Esrog is young, that's how it grows. Eventually, as it gets larger, then it weighs down the branch, and so it flips over. But for purposes of the mitzvah, the end with the ukitz is considered to be the bottom, because that's how it was when the esrog was younger, and the end with the pitim is considered to be the top. That's considered to be the top, and that's how all of the dalad minim. Then you have to hold that way in that orientation. So here, let's say he picked them up and took them out upside down. So therefore you could have where he's picking them up and carrying them out, but he hasn't yet been yotze. So that would be the case. Abaya says where Rabbi Yossi would say that he's potter, that he's potter from a chatas. Tosfos, by the way, points out another factor over here. You could Abaya on the face of it could have answered another possibility that mitzvah tzriches kabana. You could have, let's say, he's taking it out the regular way, right side up, but he's not intending with this carrying out to be yotze the mitzvah. We could have said it that way. Apparently Abaya does not hold of that concept. In fact, there's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Tosfos refers to that has a whole discussion about this, whether mitzvah tzriches kavana or not. Where Rava says that they don't, and Abaya has a bunch of questions on him. So maybe eventually, after that sugya took place, then Abaya came to agree with Rava that mitzvah ain't tzriches kavana, and therefore that you're going to be yotze whether you had kavana. To be yotze at that time or not. And obviously, since we're talking b'shogeg over here, we're not talking about where he deliberately said, I'm picking it up, not intending to be yotze with it, because then he would know not to carry it out on Shabbos. Anyway, so that's Robert's.
Regarding the etrog, What's the top and what's the bottom? The pitum is the top,
so that's what
right?
I said. The pitum is the top. When the estrog first starts growing, then it's in the same orientation as when we take it during Sukkot. The Uketz is on bottom, attached to the branch, and the pitum is on top. As the estrog matures, then it flips over because it eventually weighs down the branch, and then it's the other way around. But still, as far as halacha is concerned, the uketz is considered the bottom and the pitum is the top. Okay. Anyway, so that's Abaya's answer. Therefore, that we're talking about that. So that's Abaya's answer that you took it. Let's say you took it out upside down, so you weren't yet yotze. Rava Amar Afilu Tema Shaloi Hachoi. Rava says you don't even need that. Conceivably, you could have even that you take them right side up. Hachab Maya Skin and Kanchetzia Bekli. Let's say you carried out the Dalad Minim inside a Keli. So let's say, for example, you took a flower pot or something and carried out the Dalad Minim in it. Now, by the way, what about shouldn't you be Chayav for the flower pot itself? So the Meiri says no, because we learned in Masech the Shabbos a concept that, for example, if you carry out a live person on Shabbos, if you carry out a live, healthy person on Shabbos, you're potter, because chai nosa etzatmo, really they're helping carry themselves. And we say, therefore, in the Mishnah, that even if you carry them out on a bed, then that also you're potter, because the bed is toffel, the bed is bottle to the live person. The same thing over here, then, if you carry out the Dalad Minim in a flower pot, let's say, the flower pot is going to be bottle to the Dalad Minim. And since Rabbi Yossi is telling us that you're potter as far as the Dalad Minim, because you're toya b'dvar mitzvah, you're preoccupied with the fact that you know you have to do the mitzvah, and therefore you forgot that it's Shabbos, and therefore that's reason enough to potter you. So therefore, the flower pot is going to be the same kind of thing. So the question is, didn't we learn a few days ago, and Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, that Rava himself said that you're allowed to take lulav and estrog, holding them using something else. We talked about over there. Let's say you take your sudder, your head scarf, your head turban or whatever, and wrap it around the lulav and estrog and do natilas lulav that way. Then Rava had said you yotze. So why? So the same thing should apply if you're carrying them in a flower pot or something. And the answer is no. Hani mila derech covered. What Rava was saying was that if you do it in a covered dicker way, like that, you're wrapping the sudder around the lulav and estrog and taking them, then you yotze. Abel derech bizoyin loy, but not if you're doing it in a way of bizoyin. So let's say not a flower pot. Let's say Rashi says, for example, let's say you took them out in a plate or a bowl or something. So then you're not going to be yotze, because that's not a covered dicker way of taking the dalad minim. So therefore, that would be a scenario then when you're carrying it out and you haven't yet been yotze by picking them up. So those are a couple of ways that you could conceivably have that the person carries out the lulav and esrog and has not actually been yotze with them yet, and that's when Rabbi Yossi would potter him from a chatas. Okay, in this connection, Omer Rav Huna, Omer Hoyer Rabbi Yossi. Here's another din about toya b'dvar mitzvah that Rabbi Yossi says. Rabbi Yossi used to say, Oyla sa'oif shenimtzes bein agapayim. Suppose you find, now, if you find an oila sa'oif between agapayim. Now, agapayim means wings, so therefore it means birds. Well, Rashi explains it means birds. Now, you have like this. There's oila sa'oif and there's chat sa'oif. The procedures for them are somewhat different, but nevertheless, at the end of them, you have a dead bird. Now, the difference is an oila sa'oif is supposed to be completely burnt on the mizbeach. A chata sa'oif, once they squirt the blood of it onto the mizbeach, then the kohenim are supposed to eat the chata sa'oif. And like all other korbanos, there's a mitzvah for them to eat it. So suppose that a kohen finds an oila sa'oif bein agapayim, he finds it among a bunch of birds to which malika has been done. He doesn't realize that it's an oila sa'oif. He thinks mistakenly that's a chata sa'oif. And by the way, Rashi points out, usually the chata sa'oif and the oila sa'oif are usually done at different areas of the mizbeach, different corners of the mizbeach. So usually there wouldn't be a possibility of mixing them up. But you have when there's a lot of oila sa'oif being brought, then usually they do it by the southeast corner of the mizbeach. But if there were a lot of if there were a lot of Olas HaOif being brought, then instead they would do it at the southwest corner, which is the same one where you do a Chatas HaOif. So therefore, so the only difference is that an Ola is done in the top, the blood is squirted on the top half of the Mizbeach, and a Chatas HaOif the bottom half. So therefore, it could be possible now that you find, you put the bird over there, and now a Kohen gets mixed up and thinks, he sees, oh, this bird is over here by the southwest corner, it must be a Chatas HaOif, and he doesn't realize that it was actually an Olas HaOif that was brought there because there wasn't enough room by the other corner. Anyway, so he thinks, so he finds it Bein Agapayim. So Rashi explains again that Bein Agapayim means among these various birds that are there for that have had Malika done to them. Other Ritva is a different explanation. Agapayim means like the areas on the Mizbeach where they kept the Chatas HaOif and the Olas HaOif. You'd have they do the Malika, they do the squirting of blood of them on the Mizbeach, and then they would leave them in these places temporarily until they come to do the next stage of them, which is burning them on the Mizbeach or eating them, as the case may be. So here, a Kohen finds this Olas HaOif over here, it between those places, or Chasav or Chatas HaOifi. So he thinks that it's a Chatas HaOif for Ochla, and he eats it, Potter. Because again, he's Toyah B'dvar Mitzvah. He thinks that he has a mitzvah to accomplish to eat the Chatas. Instead, he wound up eating an Olas HaOif, which is Me'ila. Nevertheless, though, Rabbi Yossi is going to say he's potter from a korban me'ila because he was toya b'dvar mitzvah. So the Gemara says, why does Rav Huna need to tell us that? Hainu hach, isn't that exactly the same thing? Once we know that Rabbi Yossi says toya b'dvar mitzvah is potter, then automatically that's going to apply to any case of toya b'dvar mitzvah. Tosfos actually says, well, the truth is in Pesachim we had a sugya on the subject of toya b'dvar mitzvah. Where the Gemara established over there that Rabbi Yossi requires another criterion. Not only it should be Toya B'dvar Mitzvah, but also it has to be that Zmanoi Bohul, it has to be that he thinks that there's very little time left, and if he doesn't do it, then he's going to miss the mitzvah altogether. Well, here with the Chav, so with the Lulav, you have that, because he may think to himself, he doesn't have enough time, I'm not going to be able to do the mitzvah of Lulav today otherwise. In the case of the Chatas HaOif, same thing. He's thinking that if I don't eat it, it's going to become noiser. Anyway, so why does Rav Huna have to tell us this case about the Chatas HaOif, about the Olas HaOif that he mistook for the Chatas HaOif? That is the same exact case. It's Toya B'dvar Mitzvah. And the answer is, because without Rav Huna having told us, you would have thought Hosam would Torah B'dvar Mitzvah Potter. You know why in the case of the Lulav, Rav Yossi is pottering him, Hainu de Ovad Mitzvah, because at least he accomplished a mitzvah. In the end, afterwards, he did take Lulav. In the end, he did take Lulav with this Hotzah. So previously, in other words, when we said that he took out the Lulav in a flower pot or whatever, actually, I didn't say it correctly. What it was is earlier in the day, let's say he had picked up the Lulav in a flower pot. So therefore, he wasn't yet Yotze. Now he picked up the lulav, and with that, and with that, he's Yotze, and he carries out to Rosh Hashanah, still holding it. So therefore, at least in the end, he accomplished a mitzvah. Aval hocha the Torah b'dvar mitzvah, the loyav mitzvah. But in the case of the Chatas HaOif, not only he was Torah b'dvar mitzvah, he didn't actually accomplish a mitzvah, because the fact is he didn't eat a chatas, which would have been a mitzvah to do. Instead, he ate an oila, which is not a mitzvah to do. So he didn't even accomplish a mitzvah. A Maloi, so you would think maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yossi is still going to be Machayev him in that case. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Huna tells us that he heard from his Rabbeim that Rabbi Yossi, now Rav Huna lived generations after Rabbi Yossi, so it's not like he asked Rabbi Yossi personally, but Rav Huna learned from his Rabbeim that this is what Rabbi Yossi holds, that even in that case, he would still be Potter. Okay, the Gemara says, Mesvi, though, I have a contradiction. So I have a contradiction on that. Another brisa says, Rabbi Yossi Yomer, Hashtrichet is a tomid she'enim avukar chil chosei b'Shabbos. If a person on Shabbos shechts a korban tomid that was not properly checked for mumin, so you have an animal for a korban is supposed, in particular the korban tomid is supposed to be checked for mumin 4 days before it's shechted. And for that reason, actually, what they would have is, they had, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, they had a chamber, a lishka, in the Beis Mikdash, where they always kept a minimum of 6 sheep that were mavukar, that were checked. And that way, the idea is that each day, they'd be checking more and more of them each day they'd be checking two of them, and then later that day they would bring two of them as the korban tamid. So now let's say a person took a sheep which he thought was mavukar and it turned out was not, and shechted it as a korban tamid. So chayav chatas. Rabbi Yossi would say he's chayav chatas. Now we don't just mean if it turned out to be a balmum. We mean Tosfos says even if it turned out to be a tam. Because the fact is, it still requires that bikur dalad yamim. It still has to be checked for 4 days before the shechita, and you don't have that, and therefore it was a possible korban. So Rabbi Yossi is going to say he's chayav chatas, but tzorich tamid acher, and you need to bring a different korban tamid. Now, if you're telling me that Rabbi Yossi holds toya b'dva mitzvah is potter, even when he didn't accomplish the mitzvah, then why should he be chayav chatas over here? Okay, he didn't accomplish the mitzvah, and we're saying we need another tamid. So what? He was toya b'dva mitzvah. The answer is Amalei. So the answer is he answers him. Pashtus means Rava answered Abaya, or one of the other, or Rav Huna answered, one of the other Chachamim. Barmi Nadahi. Never mind that case. That's a special case. Daho Itmar Allah, because there was said about that. Amar of Shmuel Bachitoy, Amar of Hamnuna Sava, Amar of Yitzchak Ba'ashi, and Amar of Huna, Amar Rav. So actually, Rav Huna himself is part of this chain. The case over there is where, to begin with, he took the sheep from a lishka where the sheep had not been checked at all. So now, in other words, when it comes to the ones in the lishka satloyim, in the chamber where they keep the sheep and they're checking every day, and every day they're checking them. So, okay, if he wound up taking the wrong sheep from there, so let's say you have a sheep that was just brought in there yesterday, and it's only had bikur for one day, sure, that would be toya b'dva mitzvah, because at least it was in that chamber, and so he got mixed up and took the wrong one. But let's say he goes, the case is, Rav Huna is saying, let's say he went to a different chamber altogether and took a sheep from there that had not had any bikur done to it at all. What is he doing with those sheep? He's not totered with those sheep. He's not preoccupied with those sheep. Those are not going to be brought as a korban anytime soon. So it's not like he's thinking to himself, "Well, I got to deal with those sheep. Otherwise, when are they going to be brought as a korban?" So this is already. Rashi says korev lamezid. It's not full mazid, fine, but it's quarter of the mazid. It's much closer to a mazid than the previous cases, and therefore Rabbi Yossi is going to be mechayev of him a chatas for that. So now, okay, all told, then the bottom line is we can summarize Rabbi Yossi's shita as follows: Toya b'dvar mitzvah is potter, and the halacha in fact is like him, but you have several criteria in it. Number one, as Tosfos brought from the Gemara in Pesachim, it has to be that zmanei bohol. It has to be that time is short. We're not talking about a mitzvah that could be done any time. We're talking about a mitzvah that has to be done today. It has to be, as the Gemara started by saying, that he wasn't already yotz the mitzvah when he did this action. That's mechal Shabbos. And now we said a further point. It doesn't matter whether in the end he accomplished a mitzvah or not. Even if in the end what he did not actually accomplish a mitzvah, then he's also potter. However, it has to be that it can't be that he's korev lamezid. It has to be that the object that he used is actually something that is in line to be used for the mitzvah, like the lulav and esrog in our Mishnah, or like in the case of the chatas ha'oif and ola ha'oif over there, at least it was a bird for a korban. It was in the place where you would expect to find birds for korbanos, versus when he took a sheep from the wrong lishka where he has no business going to that lishka at all. That in a nutshell, those are the criteria of Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Okay, the Mishnah says, Mekabelas isha miyad, continuing on the topic of taking lulav and esrog on Shabbos, as they used to in the time of the Bais Mikdash, Mekabelas isha miyad no miyad baila, a woman who, as we're going to point out in the Gemara, herself is not chayev in the mitzvah of Dalad Minim, so she nevertheless is allowed to take the lulav miyad bno miyad baila from her son or from her husband. So we don't say that she's picking up something which is muktzah for her. Or machziratu l'mayim b'Shabbos, and on Shabbos she's allowed to put it back into the water. Right? Where you keep your lulav in water, of course, to keep it fresh. So she's allowed to put it back. She's allowed to put it back there on Shabbos. The same way as you're allowed to take lulav on Shabbos, the same way you're allowed to put it back in the water. Rabbi Yehuda, remember Shabbos Machzirin, Rabbi Yehuda qualifies that. He says, on Shabbos, all you're allowed to do is put it back in the water, but you're not allowed to add water, and you're not allowed to change the water. So Rashi just says the reason. Rashi says the reason why you wouldn't be allowed to is because that it looks like tikune mona. It's derabanan. It looks like you're fixing a keli. So therefore, all you can do is put it into the water. Rabbi Hananel makes another point, which is if you change the water, then it looks like you're watering plants on Shabbos, and that would be also. So all you can do on Shabbos is put it back into the same water that you took it out of before. But Yom Tov Meisifin, on Yom Tov, you can not only put it back in the water, but you can also add more water. You can't change the water altogether, but you can add more water to the pitcher. Uvam Moed Machlifin, on Chol HaMoed, you change the water. And in fact, now the fact that you can change the water is not really that much of a chiddush. On Chol HaMoed, many melachos are mutter, as we're going to learn in a few months, Beis Hashem and Masech HaMoed Katan. The chiddush is, Rashi says, what Rabbi Yehuda means is on Chol HaMoed, you should change the water. Don't keep the same water throughout. Change it, and Davka make a point of doing that during Chol HaMoed. The Mishnah finishes off. Katan, a katan, even the below bar bas mitzvah, who knows how to shake the lulav, is chayev and lulav. An interesting point is we learned at the top of the Amud that you don't need to shake the lulav in order to be yotze. As soon as you pick up the lulav, you're already yotze. So why are we making the criteria over here only when the cotton is old enough to shake the lulav? Are we saying that he's chayev in lulav? Why don't we say as soon as he's old enough to pick up the lulav, he should be chayev because of the mitzvah of chinuch? So there's a couple of interesting points about that. One is that when the Chachamim made the mitzvah of chinuch, they made it that the whole point of chinuch, after all, is to train the child to do the mitzvah properly. So therefore, we wanted to begin with train him to do the mitzvah in the proper way. Now, given that it's true, technically you yotze by only picking up the lulav and esrog. Nevertheless, though, the proper way, as we learned the other day, is to shake it. So to begin with, we want the child's chinuch to be in that way where we're having them not only pick up the lulav but also shake it. So until they're old enough to do that, then they're not chayev in lulav yet. Chassam Sofer makes a different interesting point on it. He says that actually the Nanuim is actually part of the mitzvah d'oraisa. It's not just d'rabbanan that you're supposed to do Nanuim. It's actually part of the mitzvah d'oraisa, he says. And therefore, so as long as the child is not of eight, so it's true you don't have to shake the lulav in order to be yotze, but he says this is kind of like the rule that the Gemara mentions in a bunch of places called kol haroi lebila ein bila ma'kevesboi. When somebody is able to do a certain aspect of a mitzvah, even if they don't actually do it, the fact that they could have done it is reason enough for them to be yotze. As opposed to if they couldn't even have done it in the first place, then we say they're not yotze. So here, if the Chassam Sofer says if the child is young enough that he can't actually shake the lulav, then you can't yet be mechayev him at all. Once he's old enough to shake it, then he's yotze, even if he only picks it up. And anyway, once he reaches that age, then he's chayev and lulav midrabanan as a matter of chinuch. One caveat though is we learned yesterday that the lulav on the first day of Sukkot and the second day outside Eretz Yisrael has to be lochem. It has to belong to you. And the Gemara elsewhere points out that therefore you have a problem if you actually give the lulav and esrog to a child, because then he can be koine it, but he can't be makne it back to you. So if you give it to him before you yourself were yotze, and in chutz la'aretz you have that problem between the first and the second day, then you have a problem because now afterwards when you want to do it, it's not going to be lochem. So in Shulchan Aruch it mentions there are rishonim who learn that if the child is over the age of, that the Gemara calls in Bava Basra pu'utos, which is when they start being aware of what money is and what buying and selling and then kinyan and so forth is, which is depending on the kid's abilities, anytime between 6 and 10 years old, then maybe they can be makne it back to you. But other posts can disagree with that and say till bar bas mitzvah they can't. So one possibility, of course, is you get them their own set. But another possibility is you make sure to hold onto the lulav and esrog together with them while they're shaking it, and then that way that it never left your hand, and that way they weren't coining it. The the poskim also discuss, actually, can you maybe, so you just don't give it to them in the first place. Maybe what you do is just lend it to them, or just do something else that's not, that they're not actually going to be koneh. After all, they're only doing it because of chinuch. Maybe they're not required, b'chlal, to have lochem, that the lulav and esrog should actually belong to them. And the poskim debate whether that's a valid way of doing it, or whether, again, like we're saying, when you're training them in the mitzvah, maybe you need to train them in a full mitzvah that would be valid d'oraisa, which would include the matter of lochem.
Concerning lochem, yes. For other mitzvahs, we say that when a child eats by ease at the father's table, he's still considered a child, regardless of if he's bar mitzvah or not bar mitzvah.
True, as far as, for example, whether his metziah belongs to his father. Right, but on the other hand, we're saying by the lulav, it has to be lachem, it has to belong exclusively to you. We talked even yesterday, for example, about an esrog that belongs to partners, or what they used to do in the old days when you had one lulav and esrog for the whole community, how they have to be machneh to each other. So on the face of it, you have to be machneh the lulav and esrog to the child. So again, you have some poskim saying maybe you don't, since he's doing it only for chinuch, it's not that important to be machneh to him anyway. Others say that no, you have to be machneh to him. Once he's doing the mitzvah, he has to be doing it in the full way that's valid d'oraisa. And then you have the problem. How is he machneh? Back to you.
Lachem implies that they have a person of their own. They're independent, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. A child has the ability to be koina things. In the case of the metzia of a child, for example, the chachamim made a takana that it should belong to the father. But at least on a daraisa level, they have the ability to be koina something. They just don't have the ability to be machne back to you.
To aminhag is to give them, each one of them, their own lulav and esrog, correct?
So ideally, what you do is you get each of them their own lulav and esrog, and then you avoid the whole problem in the first place. But if you're not going to do that, then some poskim will say that you shouldn't be machneh to them in the first place. And others will say that what you should do is go be machneh. Others of them say, just make sure you can be machneh in a certain, you can, but hold on to it in such a way that it never really leaves your rishus. And again, there are some poskim that brings in Shulchan Aruch that mention that if the child is over the age of pu'utos, where already they're old enough to understand what buying and selling and then business is, which is anywhere between 6 and 10, depending on the child's abilities, then already maybe they are able to be machneh back to you, and therefore you have no problem. So the Gemara says on the first part where we said that a woman can take the lulav and esrog, that the woman can take the lulav from her husband or her son and put it back into the water. So the Gemara asks, pshita, isn't that obvious? Obviously, if the father or the son were able to take lulav on Shabbos, then it's not mukta. So why would we think it's mukta for her? And the answer is ma'udatema. Otherwise, you might have thought, given that a woman is not chayev in lulav and esrog, maybe she shouldn't be allowed to take it from them. Maybe it would be mukta for her. And kamash malan, therefore, the Mishnah tells us that there's no problem with it. So Rashi explains, because since it's roi for men to take it, therefore it's considered a keli. So one there, therefore it remains, therefore it's mutter for everybody. You can't say that for some people it's mukta, and for some people that, and for some people, and for some people it's not. The Ritva explains a little bit differently. Since it has to be picked up for the mitzvah, then therefore we can't very well put a din of mukta on it, because that would prevent you from doing the mitzvah in the first place. So the concept of tiltul has been removed as far as the lulav and esrog, and therefore it remains suspended for everybody, including for her. Then we said in the Mishnah, Kotnai Delananeya, a child who's old enough to shake lulav is chayev in lulav. So now that we mentioned that, the Gemara brings a whole bunch of other dinim of at what point is a child chayev in various mitzvahs. Obviously, we're talking all d'rabbanan, d'oraisa, a child is not chayev in any mitzvahs at all. There's in fact a sicha someplace where the Rebbe analyzes that point. How is it that d'oraisa, you could say, so what is a child supposed to wake up on their 13th birthday and all of a sudden be chayev in mitzvahs without training? In principle, d'oraisa, yeah, that's how it would be. Then they'd start learning how to perform the various mitzvahs. But d'rabbanan, of course, you have a concept of chinuch long before that, is to train them to do the mitzvah. So for each mitzvah, there's a different age. So kotnei delan aneya chayev lulav. If the child is old enough to shake the lulav, then he's chayev in lulav, as we said. Lisatif chayev betzitzis. When he's old enough to wrap himself in to wrap himself in a garment, which in those days their garments usually had four corners, chayev betzitzis. Then he's chayev in tzitzis. So nowadays that we don't wrap ourselves, nowadays we just put out. Nowadays we wrap ourselves in a talus, but that's only later. The talus cotton, the minig is usually that you start having the child, you start having a boy wearing it when he's around 3 years old. So leisatef chayev betzitzis. Lishmer tefillin, once he's old enough to guard tefillin, Rashi explains that he knows not to go with them into the bathroom. And Shulchan Aruch mentions a different point also that he knows not to pass gas while wearing them, or not to go in, or not to fall asleep while wearing them. Then Oviv lekeach le tefillin, then his father buys tefillin for him. Nowadays most kahilas don't do that. I understand that the Yemenites actually do that, and they have a child start wearing tefillin as soon as he's old enough to know how to be careful with them, like we're saying in the Gemara over here. The minig in most parts of the world, in most kahilas, is that a child only starts putting on tefillin shortly before his bar mitzvah, or minhag, for example, is 2 months before bar mitzvah. You have rare exceptions to that. For example, the Friedrich Rebbe was told by the Rebbe Rashab to start putting on tefillin in private from age 11. It's an interesting point, by the way. Why does it say over here lekeach lo tefillin? We didn't say lekeach lo lulav or lekeach lo tzitzis. There's a Tosfos elsewhere at the beginning of Erechin. The Gemara also brings this this sugya about who's chayev in these various mitzvahs and when. And the Gemara brings this braisa also. So Tosfos over there explains what it is with when it comes to a talus, the child probably already has a talus. It's a garment. He's already wearing it. When it comes to a lulav, the father doesn't necessarily have to buy one for the child because he could give the child his, like we just talked about. On the other hand, with tefillin, the father is going to have to buy his son a set. Therefore, it uses the expression lekeach lo tefillin, because after all, in those days, they wore tefillin all day, so it's not like the son can just use the father's set. Tosfos says another point over there also is because tefillin are expensive. So therefore the Braisi uses the expression lekeach lo tefillin, in other words, as if to say, be aware, you're going to come soon, you're going to have to shell out some money for the tefillin, unlike the other things. Next, continues the Braisa, yedei ledaber, once the child knows how to talk, Oviv learned the Torah of Kriyishma. Then his father starts teaching him Torah and starts teaching him Kriyishma. So Torah, Mahi, specifically, what part of Torah does he start teaching him? I'm not a Torah Tivolana Moshe Marosha Kelas Yaakov. That's the first pasuk that the father should be teaching the child. In fact, there's a Gemara in Bava Basra where it says over there that Rav Acha by Yaakov wrote 400 Torahs in his life, and on the face of it sounds like Sifrei Torah, and that would be a huge undertaking, because you know a Sefer Torah takes usually a year or something to write. But then the Gemara says not necessarily, maybe it means only that he wrote out the Pasuk Torah Tziva 400 times for children to be able to learn it, like we're saying over here. Krishma Mahi, what part of Krishma do you teach a child that age? Pasuk Rishon, you start teaching him, the first pasuk, just the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And then as he gets older, then he learns more and more. Next, Hayadeya Lishma Gufoy.
Regarding Kriyas Shema, is a girl chayav to say all three prakim of Kriyas Shema or not?
I don't think she is, because it's a mitzvah seser shazman grama, and mitzvah seser shazman grama, women are potter. Practically speaking, they say it nowadays, but I haven't looked it up, but I'm pretty sure they're potter. Yeah, Nashim Babonim Akhanim Purma Krishma. Yeah, it's a Mishnah in Brachas. Yeah. Interesting to note, by the way, that we're saying over here, these are the first two psukim you teach a child, Torah Tziva and Shema Yisrael, when the Rebbe established the 12 psukim, and originally actually it was 6 psukim. A few years later, the Rebbe added the other 6. Those are the first two on the list, based on our Gemara over here. Okay, continues the Braisa. Hayadeya Lishma Gufay, a child who knows how to guard his body from becoming Tomei, then you're allowed to eat taris that his body touched. You don't have to worry that they became tummy. But not, Rashi explains, at that point, you still can't trust taris that he touched with his hands. So he knows, in other words, let's say, so he knows the child is old enough to know certain basic dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. He knows that he needs to stay away from Tumas Mes or Tumas Sheretz or whatever, not touch them, not carry the ones that would make him Tomei, in the case of Tumas Mes, not to be in Tumas Oil. So then at that point, we have a chazaka that he is Tahar, and therefore that if he touches Taharis, that if he touches Truma or Kodshim with his body, you're still allowed to eat them. But the hands is another matter, because hands, midrabanan, you have that a person's hands are a sheni l'truma, because you're dying maskoni, you're saying, because a person is always touching things with his hands. So you can have a child who's old enough to know lishmo gufoi, but not yet lishmo yodo. So at that point, therefore, if his body touches truma, you'll still be allowed to eat it. But at that point, if his hands touch truma, you still won't. Only the next stage is lishmos yodov, when he knows how to wash his hands and make sure that his hands are tahor. Then oichlan a yodov taris, then we're allowed to eat taris that he touched with his hands. Okay. Next, hayadeli, another din in tumah v'tahara, hayadeli shol v'shusa yachid sveke tamei v'shusa adam sveke tahor. Once a child is old enough to be asked whether did you become Tomei, or was there Truma in this area, or whatever, then if he's old enough to be asked to give a coherent answer, did you touch this Truma, then if it's in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and he says, I don't know, then he's going to be Tomei, Misafik, because that's how it works. Rosh Hashanah Yachid, we learn from Sukkim that when there's a Safik Tumah, Rosh Hashanah Yachid is Tomei, and Rosh Hashanah Abim, Sveke Tahor, and if the same thing happens in Rosh Hashanah Abim, then he's going to be Tahor, then he and the object that he touched are going to be Tahor. We learn that also from Sukkim. In other words, the point is, before he reaches that age, then even in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, Sveke Tahor, when he's a young child and he's not old enough to give a coherent answer, whether you touched that or not, then we treat him, the rule is like this. The basic rule is, Dover Sheyesh Das Lishol, something or someone, who has Das, and you can ask them and get a coherent answer from them, whether did you touch this or not. So now, if in a particular scenario, they say, I don't know whether I touched it, then we have the difference between Rosh Hashanah Yochid and Rosh Hashanah Abim, which we learn from Dinim of Soita, and we learn from Dinim of Soita and from Dinim of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur. On the other hand, when it comes to a Keli, which is not something that you can ask, or when it comes to a child who's too young to be asked, then Sveke Tahor even in Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Okay, next. Hayadea Lifres Kapav, once a child knows how to duchen, Chokin Le Truma Ves Hagronis, then we give him his own portion of Truma in the granaries. The Koyanim go to the granaries to collect Truma, So below that age, of course, they're allowed to eat truma, but we don't give them their own portion. We send it to their house. So either their father, so it could be their father goes to the granary and collects on their behalf, or if they don't have a father, then fine, the farmer is responsible for sending somebody with truma to this young Kohen's house. But once the Kohen is old enough to duchen, then he's old enough to get his own portion of truma. Now, the point is, Rashi explains, because below that age, it would be a bizoyan. People don't know that he knows how to guard truma and prevent it from becoming tamei. Therefore, below that age, we don't want to give him in public in the granary. Now, what is that age? Rashi explains that a person is old enough to duchen only when he has shtei sairis. So therefore, here we'd be talking about when he's a katan, when he's before shtei sairis, that he doesn't receive his own portion of truma. Once he reaches shtei sairis, and therefore he's old enough to duchen, then he's also old enough to receive his own portion of truma. Tosfos disagrees with that, and says that no, as a matter of fact, the fact is, everything we're mentioning over here as far as a katan, Shtei Cyrus is already not a cotton anymore, so it wouldn't really be the same as all the other ones. Rather, Tosfos explains, we are talking while he's still a cotton, But in other words, what it is as far as duchening, you can have a child. The Mishnah says it. The Mishnah says in Megillah that a child who doesn't have shtei sidus doesn't duchen. But that means by himself he doesn't duchen. But together with his father he can. And we have all the time in shul where children go up to duchen together with their fathers. So therefore, what we're talking about when he's old enough to know how to duchen together with his father, fine, he can't duchen by himself, but he duchens together with his father. Then he's already old enough to be receiving, even though he's below bar mitzvah, then already he's old enough to be receiving truma on his own. Next, hayadea lishchot, a child who knows already how to shecht, meaning knows how to shecht as he knows the technique. He may not know all the dinim yet, but he knows the actual technique of how to physically shecht an animal. So then we're allowed to eat from an animal that he shechted. But Rav Huna says it has to be that a gadol is watching him to make sure that he doesn't do any of the five things that would passel the shechita. For example, you have shehiyah where he makes a pause in the middle of the shechita. There's a There's drosa where he presses instead of moving back and forth. So a gadol has to be watching. Given that the child doesn't yet know the halachas, then the gadol has to be watching to make sure the child doesn't actually passel the shchita in one of those ways. But since the child knows the technique, then that's good enough. Another din, yochol lech kazayis dagon. Once a child is old enough to eat a kazayis of grain, any of the chameshis mine dagon. Then, if we're going to daven or learn Torah, then we have to stay away from his tzoya and from his meiraglayim, because then once he starts eating the five kinds of grain, then his tzoya and his meiraglayim smell bad, and therefore you're not allowed to make brachos or daven or learn Torah nearby it. And so you have to stay 4 amas away, or to be exact, 4 amas from where the smell ends. Rav Chista says that's only if he's able to eat that kazayis b'chdei achilas pras. So the same way as we say for an adult that only when a person is eating the kazayis b'chdei achilas pras does it count. So therefore, we have, for example, on the Seder night where we eat matzah, we have to eat it b'chdei achilas pras, and you have as far as Yisurim as well, as we learned at the end of Yuma, that a person is chayav for eating a kezayis of chaylev, etc., only if he ate b'chdei achilas pras, and a person is chayav for eating a kesevas agasa on Yom Kippur only if he ate b'chdei achilas pras, and so forth. So the same way over here, only if the cotton is able to eat, because the kezayis dagon b'chdei achilas pras, only then do we say that causes his tzoya and his meiraglayim to smell bad, and therefore they have to stay away from them. But if he can't, then still that's not considered that he eats a kazayis yet. But now that only applies to a child. This that we say that he has to eat a b'chdei achilas pras. When you have an older person, even if he can't eat a kazayis b'chdei achilas pras, we still need to stay away from its soya and meiraglayim. Dichtiv b'yosef das yosef machay. As we find, the pasuk says, the more intelligence, the more understanding, the greater the pain. So in this case, what it means is once a person is old enough to have intelligence, even if right now he's sick or whatever, and he's not able to eat a kazayis b'chdei achilas pras, doesn't matter, still his soya and his meiraglayim are no good, and you have to stay away from him, because the fact that he has greater das also means, therefore, that itself has a certain effect. Actually, what it is, the halacha is that once the person is old enough to be able to eat kazayis b'chdei achilas pras, even if he didn't actually eat it, then already you have to stay away from his tzoya and his meiraglayim. So even if right now, let's say he's old, and now he's lost the ability to eat kazayis b'chdei achilas pras, nevertheless, the din from before still remains in effect. Okay. Next, yochol lecho kezayis tzli. If once a child is old enough to eat a kezayis of roast meat, meaning, in other words, Tosfos explains, you can have now, even a younger child is able to eat meat that's cooked because it's softer, but roast meat is tougher, so it takes a child that has to be a little older to be able to eat it. But the Korban Pesach has to be roasted. So when he's old enough to eat a kezayis of roast meat, then Shechten, all of us a Pesach, then you can count him as one of the people registered for a Korban Pesach. As we learned in Masechta Pesachim, you have to be pre-registered before the Korban is shechted to eat from a Korban Pesach. And the idea is you have to have each person registered has to be able to eat at least a kazayas of it. So now, once the child is old enough to eat a kazayas, b'chdecha is old enough to eat a kazayas of tzli, and B'pashtus was also talking b'chdecha is pras, then he's old enough to be his own person on that registration list. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's not when he's old enough to eat a kazayas of tzli, but rather, ad sheyochol levarer achila. Sorry, I skipped a line. Shenema ish lafi ochloi, and why when he can eat a kazayas of tzli? Because the pasuk says, each person according to his eating. So that means, even a child, once he's old enough to be able to eat, then we can count him. Rabbi Yehuda says no. The words ish lafi ochloi imply that he has to be able to pick out food from non-food. Ketzad, what does that mean? Suppose that once he's old enough that if we give him a pebble, then he'll know to throw it away. Eggers with no glen. On the other hand, if we give him a nut, like a walnut or something, then he'll know to take it. And remember, you know, the nut has, the meat is inside the nut. He's not going to recognize from the outside that there's food inside. But still, once he's old enough to recognize that this is food, that there's food inside here, then Rabbi Yehuda says he's old enough to be registered on his own for the Korban Pesach. Hadron alach lulav agazel. The next perek, we're continuing on the dinim of lulav and esrog, but mainly, actually, we're going to be focusing in this perek. Most of the perek, we're going to be focusing on the mitzvah of arava. Besides for, we learned briefly in the previous perek that besides for the aravas that are in the lulav, you also have a separate mitzvah of arava, which has two parts. You have a part that was done in the Bis Mikdash, where they put arovas around the mizbeach, and then they put arovas around the mizbeach, and then they go around the mizbeach, whether they go around holding the arovas or whether they go around holding the lulavim and asrogim, we're going to talk in the next couple of days, Bez Hashem. And then in addition, you have the mitzvah of beating the arovas on the ground on Hashanah Rabbah. So our perek is mainly going to focus on that, on the mitzvah of arova in the Bis Mikdash. Mishnah starts off, lulav va'arava shisha v'shiva. The mitzvahs of lulav and of the arava, again, of putting the aravas around the besmikta, around the mizbeach, those take place for either 6 or 7 days during Sukkot. Because, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, you usually don't do them on Shabbos, but if the first day Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, then you do take lulav and esrog, at least they used to, like we said in the previous perek, and as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. And when the Bis Mikdash is rebuilt, the Meher Yameinu, then we're going to do that again. Same thing as far as the Arava, the Mishnah is going to go on to say, usually you don't do the Arava on Shabbos, but if the seventh day Sukkot, Hashanah Rabbah, comes out on Shabbos, then you do. So in a year, when the first day Sukkot is on Shabbos, then you have the lulav for all 7 days, otherwise six. And the same thing, if the seventh day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, then you have the arava for all 7 days, otherwise only six. Nowadays, by the way, we don't have the kviyus that the Hashanah Rabbah can come out on Shabbos, but in those times you could. So lulav and arava are either 6 or 7 days. Next, ha-halal va-simcha shmoina, saying halal, full halal, and the mitzvah of simcha, to eat meat of shlomim, that applies shmoina, that applies regardless throughout all the 8 days, the 7 days of Sukkot plus Shmini Atzeres, as we're going to learn in the Gemara eventually how we know that. Tosfos points out, by the way, an interesting point, that you could have a scenario where you don't actually eat, where you're not actually able to eat shlomim all 8 days. Tosfos describes what happens, for example, if the first day Sukkot comes out on Sunday, which again, nowadays, we don't have that clear, but in those times you could have it. So the first day is on Sunday. The last day, Shmini Atzeres, is also on Sunday. Now, there's no way you're going to be able to eat Shlomim on the night going into Shmini Atzeres, on Hakafas night, because you can't shech them on Shabbos. You can't shech them at night. You can't have shlomim that are left over from Friday, which you're going to eat, because those you can only eat until Shkia on Shabbos. So therefore, on Motzei Shabbos, necessarily, you're not going to have shlomim. Necessarily, then, you're going to have to be yotze the mitzvah of simcha in other ways. Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Psachim that we learned that in that case, you're going to make sure you have clean clothes, make sure you have old wine. So here also in that case. But normally, what it is throughout the 8 days, you're expected to be eating meat of shlomim. And with that, you're going to have simcha. Next, sukkah v'nisuch ha'mayim shiva, sitting in the sukkah, and the nisuch ha'mayim, which we're also going to focus on. I forgot to say before, actually, we're going to be focusing on the mitzvahs of sukkahs as they were done in the Bais Mikdash. So we're going to be focusing on the arava and also on nisuch ha'mayim. Those are the two main topics of our perek. So those two, sukkah and nisuch ha'mayim, are all 7 days, because those you do on Shabbos just like on weekdays. Acholol chamisha v'shisha, and the flutes and the other musical instruments that they play by Simchas Beis Sheva, those are either 5 or 6 days, because as we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak, you didn't do those on Yom Tov, you didn't do those on Shabbos. So if the first day Yom Tov comes out on Shabbos, then you have 6 remaining days to do it. Otherwise, you have only 5, because you have to subtract the first day of Yom Tov as well as Shabbos Chol Hamoed. Okay. Let's go through them, continues the Mishnah. Lulav Shiva Ketzad. What's the scenario where you have lulav for 7 days? Yom Tov Rishon Shochag Shachalias for Shabbos. If the first day Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, lulav Shiva, then you take the lulav for the full 7 days. Because as we said in the previous parak, you take it on Shabbos as well. Or Shav Kala Yomim Shisha, if it comes out on any of the other days, then lulav during the other day, if Yom Tov comes, if any of the other days of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, so then lulav is not doicha, and then lulav is not doicha Shabbos on that day. Now the Gemara is going to ask why not. We said in the previous perek that in the Bais Hamikdash it's daraisa to take lulav and esrog all 7 days. So why are we not doing it on Shabbos? We'll see in the Gemara. But if it's the first day, then we're allowing it. Arava shiv or shav kol yomim shisha. So if any other day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, then you have lulav that year only for 6 days. Next, Arava Shiva Ketzad. Where do you have 7 days of Arava? Yom Shvi Shal Arava Shechalias B'Shabbos. If the 7th day of doing the mitzvah of Arava, meaning the 7th day of Sukkot, Hashayin Arava, comes out on Shabbos, then Arava Shiva, then you have Arava for full 7 days, because then we do the Arava on Shabbos as well, on Shabbos Hashayin Arava, or Shav Kala Yom Shisha, and if any other day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, then you only have 6 days of Arava. Mitzvah's lulav ketzad v'shabbos. How do they do the mitzvah of lulav? Yom Tov Rishon Shochag Shachalias v'shabbos. If the first day Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, and we said that then we do take lulav even though it's on Shabbos. Melichinus lulavim laharabayis. So before Shabbos, they have to take the lulavim to the harabayis. They can't carry it there on Shabbos because the truth is actually the Gemara mentions elsewhere that if the gates of Yerushalayim were not locked at night, then it would be a Rishus Rabim, implying because they are, then it's not a Rishus Rabim, and it's Machlokas Rishonim. What it means, does it mean that therefore Yerushalayim is a Karmelis, or does it mean because the gates are locked at night, it's a Rishus Yachid? If it's a Rishus Yachid, then what's the problem with carrying the Lulav and Esrog to the Bais Mikdash? So that's what we have to be talking about in times when there were breaches in the walls of Yerushalayim large enough to be mevatel the mechitzas, and therefore Yerushalayim would in fact be a Rishus Rabim. If you say that Yerushalayim is a Karmelist, then of course, for sure, you can't anyway. So therefore, they bring the lulavim to the harabayis before Shabbos. V'chazonin mekablin mehen, the chazonin, which means the shamoshim, who are there to help people with different things around the Bais Mikdash, they would receive the lulavim from them. V'sodrin oitzen al gabe itztava, and they would lay them out in rows on the itztava. The itztava is, they had benches surrounding the harabayis, surrounding the inside of the harabayis. The benches had a roof over them so that people could sit in them even in the rain or even in the rain. And so they would place the lulavim on those benches surrounding the harabayis. Vazkenim, now we're going to say soon in the Mishnah that the next day they would have to all be grabbing for them. So Vazkenim, the older people who don't want to be pushed in the crowd of everybody getting their lulavim, manichin eschalahen balishta, they would place their lulavim in a chamber in the Bais Mikdash. In any case, umulamdim oisem, Beis Din would teach the tzibur, loymar, to say, Anybody who gets my lulav, I'm giving it to him as a present. Meaning, because as we said, the lulav has to be lachem. The lulav and esrog have to be lachem. Not necessarily are you going to get your own lulav in the crush the next day. You might well end up with somebody else's lulav, or somebody else ends up with yours. Therefore, you would have to say that anybody who whoever receives my lulav, then I'm giving it to him as a matana, and that way they're able to be yotze with it. L'macher, the next day, the first day of Yom Tov, mashkimin uboyim, people would get up early and come to the Beis Hamikdash, v'chazonin zorkin oisim lefneihem, these same chazonim, the shamashim, who on Erev Shabbos laid them out on the benches, they would now throw the lulavim in front of them, v'hein mechatfin, so each person is grabbing for a lulav, u'makin, ishes chaveri, and sometimes it would happen, they end up hitting each other. So when Beis Din realized that this is getting to be a dangerous situation, there's getting to be a whole, there's getting to be fights and people hitting each other, then they made the takana that everybody should take lulav at home or in shul before coming to the Beis Hamikdash. Now, I mean, even before that, it's not like you couldn't be yotze at home or in shul, but the better way to do it was in the Beis Hamikdash. After all, the pasuk says, "Usmachtem lufnei Hashem elokeichem shivat yomim." So the ideal way to do it was in the Beis Hamikdash. So that was why, to begin with, they had this arrangement where they would do it in the Beis Hamikdash. But then, because of the sakana, instead they made the takana that it'll take place outside the Beis Hamikdash. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Amai. Now, why do you not take lulav and esrog when it comes, when any of the other days of Sukkot come out on Shabbos? Tiltul ba'almahu, isn't it only a matter of tiltul? There's no issu in it. It's only like picking up a piece of wood. So why did the Chachamim see fit to make it also on the other days? Tosfos explains, like we just said on Amud Aleph, that the lulav is in effect considered a keli. So why did the Chachamim pose a din of muhtz on it? And actually, Tosfos says the answer actually is going to be that it's not really a keli. Now we said before that it is in effect. Rashi had said that in effect it's considered a keli, therefore it's not muktzah. Tosfos is saying no, it's not really considered a keli. Therefore, the dinim of muktzah would apply to it. But the question is, why are the Chachamim imposing the dinim of muktzah on it? So the Lichi Shabbos, on the face of it, given that taking the lulav in the Beis Hamikdash is a mitzvah b'daraisa for all 7 days, then it should be Lichi Shabbos. The answer is Omer Rabba, Gzeira Shemi Yitlana B'Yodav. The Chachamim made a Gzeira because a person might take the lulav in his hand. V'yelach Eitzel Boki Lomud. He's going to go to an expert to learn how to shake the lulav or how to make the brach on it. And he's going to wind up carrying it for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. So therefore the Chachamim said not to do it on Shabbos because of that Gzeira. This is called Gzeira Derabba. It's called Gzeira Derabba because he's the one who mentions it over here. And the Gemara says, behind the time of the shofar, behind the time of the Megillah, we have the same reason why you don't blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, and why you don't lay Megillah when Purim falls out on Shabbos. All of those are based on the same idea, Shemi Yitlana B'Yodei, and all of those are called Gzeira D'Rabba, because in each of those respective Gemaras, Rabba mentions this point. Rashi mentions that, why are we focusing on Arba Amos B'Shus Rabim? Why don't we say that he might carry from Rishus Yochad to Rishus Rabim? Rashi says because there are a lot of cases where you're not going to have that. There's many more cases where you're going to be over on four Amos and Rishus Rabim. For example, let's say the Lulav was in Carmelis, or let's say it was in someplace else where there's no issur of carrying it out into Rosh Hashanah from there d'oraisa. But on the other hand, you're still going to carry it for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. And Rashi goes on with other scenarios also where you could be potter from carrying from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, but you're still going to be chayev for carrying it in Rosh Hashanah. Tosfos gives a different reason, which is that to carry from Rosh Hashanah Yachad to Rosh Hashanah Rabim is very noticeable. A person will catch himself maybe before he carries it out to Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Not always, because we said before, we had Rabbi Yossi saying that if he carried it out to Rosh Hashanah Rabim, b'shogeg, then he's potter. But nevertheless, it's less likely that he's going to forget to do that, because it seems more obvious you're carrying it outside your house. As opposed to Rosh Hashanah Rabim, you may not pay attention, you may wind up carrying it for hours. So therefore, according to either of those explanations, is why we're focusing on the 4 hours. So the Gemara asks, well then, why don't we say the same thing on the first day? Why, if the first day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos, we do take lulav, as we said in the Gemara? The answer is Rishon Hatakino Le Rabbanan Reveso. No, because we said in the Mishnah, the Chum made a takana that you take lulav in your house. So there's no concern that you're going to be carrying it outside. Because you're only allowed to do it at home, therefore you're going to remember and you're not going to carry it on Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, "Tainach achat takana." Okay, we said in the Mishnah that there was a takana at one point that they made to do that because of the fights that were breaking out in the Beis Mikdash. Koidim takana ma'ikol meimer. What are you going to say? What are you going to say about before that takana? Where people would take the lulavim to the Beis Mikdash? Why aren't we concerned that on the first day also that they might accidentally carry them out on Shabbos instead of bringing them there before Shabbos? So, the answer is Rishon de'isim min ha'Torah be'gvulin. The answer rather is going to be the first day min ha'Torah applies everywhere, even outside the Beis Mikdash. Therefore, like Gazru b'hu Rabbanan. Therefore, the Chachamim did not find it necessary to make a Gzera anywhere else. Because even in the Gvulin in those times, you're going to be taking Lulav on Shabbos. Hanach, the less new minatorah begvulin, as opposed to the other days, is not minatorah outside the Beis Mikdash. So it's not such an important netilah. Then therefore gozru b'hu rabbanon. So therefore the chachamim are going to be machmir and say even in the Beis Mikdash, which Rashi explains that the chachamim have the ability to take off something when sheval taseh. They don't have the right to say go actively violate a din d'oraisa, but they have the ability to tell us passively don't do a din d'oraisa because of our gzera, and that's how it's going to be over here. That's how it's going to be over here on the other days of Sukkot, and we'll continue tomorrow with asking why is it in that case? Why don't we do the same thing? Why don't we take lulav outside the Beis Mikdash, outside Yerushalayim when the first day of Sukkot comes out on Shabbos? When we said in the Mishnah that they did that in the time of the Beis Mikdash, so we'll get to that in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Shkayach.
Welcome to you.